All right, welcome to another edition of the Minnesota Beer Cast. My name is Drew. You can hear me on Justice and Drew, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 a.m. right here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. That in there is my co-host, Schmitty.
Hey, hey.
What's up, buddy?
Just living the dream, man.
We are doing a special Northern Lights Rare Beer Fest preview edition.
Yeah, man.
Of the Minnesota Beer Cast.
I'm pumped.
It's this Saturday at the Minnesota History Center. Yeah, man, I'm excited. I always get excited for the Northern Lights Beer Festival. It's my favorite one of the year.
We've got some guests who are going to be coincidentally at the Northern Lights Rare Beer Fest, and some folks who we just haven't caught up with recently. So we figured we'd make those two worlds meet today. So it's worked out rather well.
Yeah.
So we've got Michael Wagner from Steel Toe joining the show. How you doing, Michael? Get the on button there.
Pleasure.
All right, there we go.
There you go.
Oh, hi. Hey, I'm here.
And we've got
thanks for having me.
Joe Wells from Fair State. How you doing, sir?
Pretty good, man.
Welcome to the show. And we've got Mark Opdahl from, of course, Rare Beer Fest, Northern Lights Rare Beer Fest. How you doing, man?
What up? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. Always a pleasure. Let's preview the show. Let's jump right into it. If folks haven't had a chance to get their tickets, Mark, where can they get them? Let's start right off the bat with that.
Yeah, go to rarebeerfest.com. Got a ticket link right there. Take you right to where you got to go.
There you go. So why should folks get a ticket? Tell them why this festival is fantastic, because I know it's one of the best, but it's your baby. You're going to do a better job of telling folks why it's so fun.
I think it's just the special experience that the night offers. If you're a craft beer nerd, you probably already know about the event and maybe have tickets already. There's obviously a lot of really exclusive, specialty, limited beers available, a lot of great food, all that stuff. But if you're not a huge beer geek, you're just looking for a lot of fun, something really unique and special to do for a Saturday night, it's a great opportunity. The Minnesota History Center is probably one of the nicest buildings, architecture-wise, in the whole state, for sure. The catering service there, D'Amico, they do a wonderful job. They put out a great spread. All the food you can eat, all the beers you can drink. And the beers, these 30 breweries that we picked, we hand-selected them, and they all go and dig deep into their cellars and find some of the best beers they have available. Some of them are vintage beers. Some of them are just super hard to find. They only made a few kegs of each one, and it's just a really special night. So even if you're not a huge beer geek, it's just a fun night to go out and experience something different.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. You mentioned the food. It's one of my, anybody who knows me knows that I like food. So I'm just going to throw that out there right off the bat. I mean, it's honestly, though, we talk about it here in the show regularly, that it's a component that I feel is missing when it comes to beer. And if you go out and do some fine dining and even your more casual dining out and around town, you're going to see that people are pushing wine and cocktails and spirits are definitely picking up nowadays, but you miss that segment of beer and craft beer when it comes to dining and food around town. And you guys do a really great job of making those two worlds meet at the Rare Beer Fest.
Well, thanks. I think I agree with you on the whole pairing thing. I think wine is always pushed on people, and the tough part about wine is a lot of people don't know as much about it as they'd like to. Mm-hmm. And then also it's not very cost effective where beer is. So, I mean, I'm a big wino. I love to drink wine, but I've had a big history. I've had a big history in the wine industry, though, too. And so I know what I'm doing, and I'm not afraid to spend a big amount of money if it's worth it. But when it comes to beer, it's an entry-level cost. And so you can go and you can start with a beer with your appetizer. You can have a different one with your entree and another one with your dessert, and you're still out of it for cheaper than a glass of wine. So it's kind of a no-brainer.
100%. I like when I can go and have a glass of beer with dinner, and it's something where, even if I don't enjoy that beer and food pairing 100%, it's only going to cost me, at most, $9 if I'm really high-end, but with
$5-6,
with a glass of wine, a bottle of wine, because you're gonna have to open a bottle, right? Because how many places are pouring a nice glass?
Not something that you want to pair with a nice meal,
right? So it makes sense to me to do it by the glass as opposed to opening a bottle. And being a guy who's not into wine, man, if it's not something I enjoy, you're already $30 in, maybe.
You're to be disappointed,
right?
But whereas this way with beers, worst case scenario, like you said, you're probably, maybe it's not your favorite beer, but you're still going to drink it, and you're only out $5 to maybe $9 if you bought something, super special.
Yep. Yeah. So do you know what you've got on the menu for the event, or is that still being worked out with?
So we've kind of come up with this pretty good system in the last few years. We've kind of went with these different slider stations. And so I know everybody thinks like, well, geez, just sandwiches. But we kind of take it to the extreme with it. So every year we pick a different brewery to work with, mm-hmm. and we grab some spent grain from them. So that we use that spent grain in the rolls. So we kind of take the whole education process to the next level by using that spent grain. This year we're using Prize Brewing Company for those for the rolls. And then with those sliders, every year we change it. So it's not just a cheeseburger, a prime rib sandwich, da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. Every year it's different. There will be a vegetarian option, some kind of, you know, maybe like a spicy black bean burger, because we can't leave those guys out.
Right.
But also, I think there'll be a prime rib burger. There's a taco burger. I think there's a mini cheddar wurst. And then there's all sorts of other small plates throughout the night that are, every hour there's different stuff coming out.
The grilled jerk chicken slider with grilled pineapple and aged white cheddar, that sounds pretty solid to me.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I like it. I'm pumped. And the
D'Amico does a great job. They make us look really good.
Nice.
You guys
Everybody
know
needs
us.
One of those people.
Yeah.
Makes them look really good.
Yep.
Do you have any? I mean, of course, we'll get into what Steel Toe is going to bring, and of course, what Fair State is going to bring. Is there any beers that are kind of creme de la creme stuff that you are most looking forward to, Mark?
I personally don't get to drink that much during the event, but
no,
I know that,
working.
Yeah, you know, Cigar City, they're bringing a keg of Hunapu, which that's Surly, you know, Surly does their darkness, their Imperial Stout.
Mm-hmm.
Hunapu is Cigar City's version of that, I guess. They do a big festival around it, and the beer typically doesn't leave the state of Florida, so it's pretty special that we got a vessel of that up here. Brooklyn Brewery brought the heat. I mean, Garrett Oliver, once again this year, dug into his own personal cellar and sent one of his kegs up here along with the other beer that's coming. And Dan Parker, another friend of your show that mm-hmm. is on all the time, he's the one who was able to put that together for us, and that's pretty special. Top and Goliath always brings the heat. But Central Waters, again, you know, they just it's almost as if Anello just hangs out and waits for this event because he doesn't even think twice about bringing his best stuff, and we're so blessed to have those beers and the support of everybody else that participates in the event.
Now, last year, was it who won the best
Forager? So back to back, they're back to back champs right now. They won for Niller's the first year, and last year they won for Maple Niller's.
And so this year they're coming back with Maple Niller's, right?
Again, yeah.
So
maybe last year, maybe they didn't win for Maple Niller's. Maybe last year they won for a honey ale or something. But yeah, they have Maple Niller's this year that I saw some people on the interwebs, on the social media stuff. They're pretty excited about that Maple Niller's, I guess.
Hashtag Niller's. Barrel blended.
How many Z's are there?
Looks like it's quintuple Z on the Maple Niller's.
You know why that is?
No.
Because that's how many different vanilla beans they use in the beer.
Well, see, how am I supposed to know that?
Well, that's why I brought it up.
See,
we're here to educate.
I'm glad someone's here that knows what is going on, because I have no idea what the Z's are about.
Yeah, that's so, the only way I know how many there are.
It's a double barrel blended, a barrel blended double stout brewed with maple syrup and aged on vanilla beans from five different growing regions.
Hence the five Z's.
Gotcha. See, it all makes sense now. It's coming together.
Yeah. It's early.
I do see that you guys have Earth Rider Brewery at the fest, and I'm excited for that. It's been on my list of places to go.
Oh yeah,
and I'm pumped to try some beer from Earth Rider.
Well, we're both friends with Allison. You know, mm-hmm. we knew her from before she was at Earth Rider when she was at Thirsty Pagan,
mm-hmm.
and they're doing some really really exciting things up there. Kind of reminding people there's other people on the other side of that big lake up there.
Right.
Over on the Wisconsin side that are making some really good beer. And we're truly blessed to have them down here for it.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'm pumped. If anybody listens to the show, you know that I'm a big fan of Shells as well. And they're going to bring some really great mixed colors.
Unreleased beers.
Unreleased.
Yeah.
So, well, it fits right into the theme with the Rare Beer Fest. I mean, that's
weird.
That's how it goes.
Yeah.
Right? So you're not going to see much stuff that's going to be easy to get your hands on. If anything, it's easy to get your hands on here. They've got Binary Storm, their two-year mixed culture Berliner Weiss aged on boysenberries. And then their Elf Estate, it's a two-year-old mixed culture Flanders Red aged on cherries.
They sound horrible, right?
That second one, that Elf Estate, I'm not a guy that like goes and like waits for like beer releases and like is the truck chaser guy, but that really gets me excited.
It's conveniently right across the aisle from the food too. I had you in mind when I did that.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I like it. It works well. Let's preview what you guys are bringing to the festival, Michael and Joe. Do you have can you tell us what you're going to bring to the festival, Northern Lights Rare Beer Fest?
Sure, I would love to. We're looking forward to it. You know, like you guys have already said, it's a really cool premier event. I mean, the types of beers there is outstanding. So It's fun to be a part of. You know, we've been a part of it every year. We're bringing a really cool version of.
Hang on. Let's tease what you're going to bring because we are up against the clock here.
Look at that.
So let's take our first break, and then we will come back with more of your Northern Lights Rare Beer Fest preview episode of the Minnesota Beer Cast. Again, that's happening Saturday night in Minnesota History Center. Tickets are still available. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Minnesota Beer Cast, your Northern Lights Rare Beer Fest preview edition of the program. Hey, Schmitty, there is still, last time I checked, right, there's still some room available, still spots available for our trip to Germany.
Better get on those if you're interested in joining us for the trip to Germany. It's going to be a fantastic trip. We're going to go to Oktoberfest. We're going to go see some classic spots, some Neuschwanstein Castle in the German Alps.
Wow, nicely done.
It's going to be a beautiful,
would never
beautiful
attempt
trip.
To say that.
Well, I didn't say it right the first time, but I've been there a few times. So it's actually this will be the second time. So I've only been there once, but it's super fun. It's super beautiful. You can see
just one part of the itinerary. I mean, it's a full. We're there for 5 days. You know, September 20. We leave on September 25th, mm-hmm. and every day there are things planned. There are we're going to Bavarian towns. We're going to drink 1,000-year-old beer.
No, not 1,000-year-old beer.
Yeah, no, that's what
beer
it said.
Made by a 1,000-year-old brewery.
What?
Yes.
No, I want 1,000-year-old beer.
If you can find it, yeah. I'll watch you drink it. I'll put that on video. We'll put that on Periscope. And,
I have a feeling there'll be a lot of video to come from this trip. So you don't want to miss it. You want to be a part of it. Go to MinnesotaBeerCast.com or the Minnesota Beercast Facebook page. There's links up with all the information, including how to sign up. So go do that now. Sign up your entire family and all your friends.
No, except for your kids. Don't bring your kids.
Well, people can bring their kids if they want.
Oh, what? I don't know how many kids are allowed to come to Oktoberfest, are they?
I've never been. I don't know. It's Germany. There's like no laws in Germany.
I don't think
they do
that's
whatever
true.
They want.
I don't know.
I looked it up in Wikipedia.
Oh, well, then, you know.
It's accurate.
Abe Lincoln always said, believe whatever you read on the internet. Mm-hmm. It's true. It's damn true. let's get back into the show. When we left off, we were teasing Steel Toe's beer that they're going to bring to the Northern Lights Rare Beer Fest. Michael Wagner, before Drew so rudely cut you off,
I know, it's terrible,
and teased the segment, you were going to get into your offerings at the Northern Lights Rare Beer Fest. What are you bringing, sir?
Yeah, let's talk about it. First, though, Oktoberfest, I have been. I don't know what the minimum age is, but I saw kids there who were 14 to 16 who were definitely consuming.
Oh, I thought maybe there was, you know, Drew says there's no laws. I figured maybe it was child labor. They were
they were definitely working. Okay. I mean, there were kids under 14 working, over 14 drinking.
Nice.
No, it is good fun. So that's a pretty cool trip. I want to see some of that video, too, when that comes back.
That might be like Vegas. I don't think you're allowed to take pictures.
Yeah.
What happens at Oktoberfest stays at October. Fest.
I think that is a saying.
I think if it's not, it should be.
So Rare Beer, we're stoked to be a part of it again. They put on a great show there. We love the History Center. It's a really cool venue, and it's really set up really nicely. You know, we're bringing some really cool stuff, something that we've never done before, and then something vintage. Mm-hmm. So the unique one-off thing that we're bringing is a version of our Descent. It's a 7% alcohol export stout. And I love to say the word filberts because filbert is a great word. But that's the another name for hazelnuts.
Great nut.
Right?
Yeah, it's a great nut. Yeah.
I thought it was a nerd for just like a guy, like a name for a guy who wears a pocket protector.
A filbert?
Like, yeah, like, oh, who's the guy in accounting? I think that's Filbert.
Comic strip, right?
That's Dilbert.
Filbert, Dilbert.
It's, yeah, interchangeable.
So we put filbert in this beer, so... So it's a,
poor
so
guy.
I know. Well, I don't, I mean, if he can drink his way out of it, it's right. Probably a good position to be in. I
saw that in a movie once.
Yeah.
Hoser.
So toasted filberts, we took raw hazelnuts, and toasted them, with, vanilla beans and cacao nibs, added them to our Descent, export stout. It's kind of, you know, I don't want to say the brand name of the thing, but there's this spread out there that's kind of in that realm of flavor that we are kind of going for from a flavor profile.
That's very nutty. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about it?
Yeah. So I'm really stoked. I mean, it's really really exciting to have that. And literally, we have a couple of kegs, so it's super limited.
Well, I think the coolest thing about it is Descent is already such a great beer on its own. Just
sure, yeah.
Right out the gate, it's such a great beer. So then to go and doctor it up a little bit,
mm-hmm.
It's where I'm excited. Definitely on my list to try.
I'm going to have to do some research because I'm allergic to tree nuts. And so I don't know if I can have...
Yeah, filberts come from a tree, I think.
Filberts in it. But, yeah. Like, I don't know. I swear I've had stuff with like, hazelnuts in it before. Hmm. I've definitely had, like, the really fakey coffee-like hazelnuts.
Yeah.
And that hasn't killed me. But... I don't know if anything you put in coffee can really kill you. So yeah. It just makes you stronger.
Maybe the alcohol helps to protect you too. Well,
and
you know, the...
I do know that, like, my brother's allergic to peanuts, and if you get peanuts up warm enough, it kills like whatever the protein and the oil is that's going to have a detrimental effect to you. So was the nuts added on the cold side, I'm assuming, or on the hot side?
But they were toasted, so they were, I mean, they were brought up to basically pasteurization temperature, you know, oven toasted. So.
All right.
I don't know. I would look into that. I'm not going to make any guarantees that they're not going to kill you, so, you know, that's on you.
I might ask my doctor. I might just come and bring my EpiPen.
I would say 1 ounce of it, 2 ounces of it, probably is not going to kill you.
We'll find out.
If it does... Well, at least we'll have it on camera.
There's worse ways to go. There are worse ways to go for sure.
I mean, you know, life's about living. You got to roll the dice. But why not? Well, it's what else are you into this spring for Steel Toe, Michael? You brought a bunch of beers for us to talk about and to sample. I've been enjoying the size 4 as we've been getting into our conversation here.
Yeah, and this is, you know, we're still early on in being able to drink size 4 from a can, which is really fantastic. We brought it out in cans along with its Big Brother Sticker Fight, two beers that were kind of semi-seasonal beers over the past couple years, and both big fan favorites. And last October, we were able to kind of expand our offerings in canned product, and now both Size 4 and Sticker Fight, coming into spring this year and into summer, we're expecting those to be, you know, really good, and, you know, go and pick those up for sure. Size 4 is one of my favorite beers that we make. I mean, I think it's one of those underappreciated beers and, you know, this session IPA category where people, you know, you can really have a few. It's 4.4% alcohol. It's something that, you know, you're out on the boat, you're hanging out, you know, all summer long. It's really a great beer to have around. So we're stoked to have it in cans. It's very cool.
No, I love this beer. One of the things I wanted to ask you about it is the category of IPA, particularly session IPA, is do you think that this is an appropriate category? Do you think that there should be a thing as a session IPA category, or do you think there's controversy surrounding the marketing and the category of that beer?
I think, I mean, for all intents and purposes, IPA has become a marketing catch-all,
mm-hmm.
IPA in general. You know, if we were, you know, 10, 15 years ago, this beer would be a pale ale.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is.
What was that?
It is.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a pale
ale. It's also my go-to favorite, one of my favorite beers, period, to drink from the state of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I don't say that in a bad way.
No, I mean, I think that it's a matter of semantics and how we categorize things. And, you know, what happened was is that people wanted a certain thing out of what they were expecting in an IPA. And what pale ales weren't providing that. So what people created was a beer that you could market or call an IPA that was a hoppier, really, you know, impressively dry hopped version of a pale ale, mm-hmm. but call it a session IPA. And what we call this is, we used to call it an India session ale. Now we just call it an India pale ale, but it says session ale on the side of it. You know, it's one of those things where session ale kind of says that it's low in alcohol, mm-hmm. Which is a good indicator of, you know, can I have a few, or, you know, it's going to be lower ABV. But IPA is that you're expecting punchy, aromatic, you know, hops in kind of the sense of that's what you're looking for in an IPA, but just in a lower alcohol package. Mm-hmm. So it is what it is in terms of actually categorizing it. You know, you can call it a pale ale, you can call it an IPA, you can call it a session IPA, but, you know.
I don't care. I'm going to call it what you call it. It's your beer.
Sure.
I'm just asking.
I call it delicious.
Yeah, delicious
is the right term. It's yeah. fantastic.
That's what we call it, too. We just call it delicious. No, I mean, it's...
I just wanted to ask the question because I know that there's controversy on, you know, people say that, well, now every beer is an IPA. And I think that, you know, this does, I think, fall into the IPA category if you can slice it up into a bunch of different slices. And I think that sure. there are so many IPAs happening now because that let's face it, that's what people want is an IPA. Mm-hmm. And so the more IPAs that are made, the more slices that pie are going to happen. So it makes sense to me that you guys are calling it a session ale mm-hmm. IPA. So.
Yeah, like you said, it's a subcategory of a subcategory right. or something, you know. But it's a way to give people an indication of what they're getting themselves into,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take another break. You're listening to the Minnesota Beercast on AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. We'll be back after this.
All right, welcome back to the Minnesota Beercast. A couple more segments left. Lots more to get to with our guests from Fair State Steel Toe, Mark from Chop Liver.
Yeah.
Previewing more of the Northern Lights Rare Beer Fest.
I wanted to talk about some more of the beers coming out from Steel Toe. These beers aren't going to be at the Northern Lights Rare Beer Fest, but I want to talk about them anyway. Is that okay, Mark?
Sure. I mean, it's your show, it turns out.
Good. Let's get into this Doppelbock. I do love me a good Doppelbock. Tell me about it, Michael.
Sure. The idea for the Doppelbock, I really wanted to do a beer to release for a lot of people call it the fifth season, the time when in Germany they have a lot of these festivals and they release these malt forward lagers that are kind of chewy and they kind of help you get through the fasting period of Lent. And that's kind of what they're originally designed around. But that idea of that fifth season is so... so relative here in Minnesota, you yeah. know, where you kind of have that transition period where it's not spring, it's not winter, it's warming up a little bit. It could still be really cold. You know, you're not sure what the heck you're doing.
You know? That period where it kind of warms up sometimes and you can roll your window down a little bit,
yeah.
but you better do it in the afternoon because when the sun goes down, you got to roll your window back.
Yeah, the temperature swing could be 30 to 40 degrees from, you know, a matter of an hour.
Right.
So I wanted to create a beer around that. I wanted to do a really traditional Doppelbock. So that's what I did. We did a really traditional... you know, German-inspired Doppelbock, a big, malty, chewy, you know, just really nice German lager.
I like this. This is fantastic, man.
So we released it at the brewery just a couple weeks ago. We're sending kegs out. You know, if you're a retailer, you want some of this, give us a shout.
Give them a shout. If you're a retailer, get it on.
Yeah.
And
we did it with a dunkel, too. So it actually kind of worked out as this step where we did the dunkel, and then we used the yeast and did it with the Doppelbock. And so we have this really nice dunkel as well, which is a really nice... lower alcohol, dark German lager. But yeah, I mean, I just kind of felt like I wanted to make some German lagers. And we're doing more of that, and I have the capability to do more of that now that we're kind of in a position where I can make it happen. So,
how big a challenge is it for you to make, you know, like this Doppelbock and this Dunkel in like the traditional German brewing style?
I mean, we don't have... all of the mechanics from a brew house standpoint to really be able to do it in a really traditional way. But I can do it really close, and I can kind of make things work the way that I can do them to my interpretation of it, you know, within what my capabilities are at the brewery, which I think, you know, I can get really close, you know, and I think I can make a really, really good beer, but without some of the processes that I just don't have the capabilities to do.
Okay.
I'm very happy with both of them.
What processes are you missing to make it truly, you know, if you want to make it, say, 100% authentic, aside from being made in Germany, what would you have to do to make it authentic in your eyes?
Well, I mean, even authenticity, I mean, there's a lot of gray area there. You know, one person's Doppelbach, the way they're brewing it can be, you know, quite a bit different than someone else's. You know, I think I made this as authentic as I thought I could. You know, we don't have the capability to do really easy step mashes, to really do decoction mashes and things like that, where in a typical German brewery, they would do that on the mash side.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is a lot of work. And I mean, you know, you talk to any German and, you know, nothing should be easy. You know, we kind of, a lot of that mentality at Steel Toe in different ways, but we have a lot of that mentality as well. It shouldn't be easy.
If you've ever worked on a German car, you know that it's not going to be easy.
No, it should take some effort. You should have to have several people involved. There should be some conferencing over what's the proper way to do it.
Yeah, definitely.
And there's only one right way.
Yeah, exactly. So. Exactly. No, this is fantastic. I love the you know, the richer, you said, more malt forward character of this beer. Do you find that's in stark contrast to we just talked about the size 4 session IPA. This is the other side of the coin, in my opinion, and it's really more in my wheelhouse, especially this time of year. Where you've got, you know, the more malt forward, the sweeter side of beer. Do you find that there's just as much demand for that style of beer, or do you find that it is not as popular with craft beer fans?
It is not nearly as popular.
What do you think that is?
You know, I wish I had the answer. I mean, I don't know. You know, I mean, there's a small segment that goes that way, but, you know, for some reason, you know, a lot of the definition of craft beer was surrounded IPA, and it surrounded hoppy beers, it surrounded, you know, a very distinct American level of bitterness that isn't really prevalent in a lot of German beer and even English beers. You know, the origins of IPAs and pale ales are not nearly what Americans turn them into. But I don't have the answer. You know, I wish more people kind of drank seasonally and adjusted their taste. And as you come full circle, I think a lot of people do as they drink more. Mm-hmm. But I think over the course of the year, you know, you might not want a really light, pale, hoppy in January or February or March.
Don't.
You know, yeah. And I think that's, I think you just have a very refined palate.
Well,
you know.
I know I do.
Well, experience.
It's experience of what is available, you know, and I think a lot of people's scope of experience of what's available is still relatively narrow. And so there's a lot of room to expose people to it. And that's what I hope that we can do with this, you know, is expose people to a lot of different types of beer, a lot of different flavor profiles, a lot of different styles of beer, you know, the origins of the heritage of why this type of beer exists. I think that's part of our job. It's not just to make the beer, it's to...
I love that approach. So, I love the educational aspect of broadening people's palates. And I think that, you know, making beers that are not all, you know, IPA recipe 96, IPA recipe 97. You know, I love the fact that you guys are doing things like the Dunkel and the Doppelbach, and exposing people to those different flavors.
Do you get the sense from, you know, your customers and your consumers that there's a real hunger to be educated in that, in all the different styles and the history of them and what makes them different? Because that, for me, that was my entry point into the world of craft beer. Was going to a tasting. I'd never heard of a beer tasting before. This is many, many years ago, you know, and I went to a tasting, and they gave me all these different styles, and they explained the styles, and styles that, you know, before that I would avoid because I'd tried it once and it didn't hit my palate, so I'd never tried it again. But once it was explained to me what I was looking for, then I was able to appreciate them more. So is there still the craft beer, you know, consumer base has exploded, and it's, you know, a lot of people, I think, you know what they want, know what they like, but is there still a desire and a demand for those educational aspects?
I think so, and I certainly hope so. Yeah. I mean, I think we're in a great position here in Minnesota. Minnesota's craft beer brewing community is still very, very young. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been around for 8 years, and we're practically old hat at this point.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's...
People
it's,
seem
it's
to a, forget that. Yeah. That it's, I mean, still a very young industry.
Yeah, and it's a very, you know, so that also is, you know, defines a very young consumer, you know.
For sure.
You know, people who haven't been exposed like they have in places like Denver and California and Oregon, and, you know, where you've been exposed for a generation or more. Here, you know, we're really kind of at the point where I think there's a lot of additional education that can be done. I think people are still seeking out, you know, what's new and what's interesting. And I think beyond what the next new brewery is, people are, you know, I think I'd like to see people seeking out the next new beers, you know, or going back and trying styles that they haven't ever had that have been around for decades and centuries, you know, and that's kind of what this type of thing is.
Yeah. Joe, what is your thought on the expansion of, you know, maybe flavor profiles, consumer palate, the education of consumers when it comes to various styles?
Well, it's, you know, it's kind of sad because I've got really good beer buddies that, you know, they go to the beer releases, they line up, they buy all the new stuff. They're on Instagram constantly following breweries. Mm-hmm. And then I ask them, have you ever had Orval before? And they never heard of it. And I'm like, it's literally the most delicious thing in the world.
It's great
and
stuff.
You've never seen it.
It's great stuff.
And there's not the education of everything past, you know, milkshake IPAs, which, I mean, milkshake IPAs are great in their own way and it fits its niche in the market. But the people just, they haven't gotten past that.
Yeah. Yeah. What are your thoughts, Mark?
Well, I think that, you know, going back to what Michael was saying earlier, I think we were spoiled because Michael and I we're about the same age and we both have a retail background. So mm-hmm. we learned to drink seasonally. Because as beer buyers, that's what we did.
You had
3 months, you got excited because in the fall it was Oktoberfest season, and in the winter you got all these winter warmers, and then you got Celebration from Sierra Nevada, and you're just pumped. And then come spring, My Box come out, and you're just excited for summer. And then you get a bunch of wheat beers, and that's the way we learned because we didn't have all the options, right? We only had all these great, amazing national craft brands that are the pioneers. You know, the Sierra Nevadas, the Bells, I can't name them all, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We had all these pioneers and we just followed them. And now we're in a little bit of a window, a little bit of a bubble, I feel like, where we're just consuming what's available. And I think all the new craft beer drinkers are consuming what's available. And eventually here in a few more years, it's going to go back to where it was as everybody catches up education-wise and starts drinking seasonally.
There's been a movement to support flagship brands just recently here, and maybe when we come back from the break, we'll talk about what Fair State's bringing to the Northern Lights Rare Beer Fest. Maybe we'll come back and talk about that trend in the news when we come back. Are you listening to the Minnesota Beercast on AM 1130 and 103.5 FM?
Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, final segment of this week's Minnesota Beercast. Literally the saddest words that I say every week.
This has been a great show.
It's been a lot of fun.
It has.
Yeah, and we're really looking forward to being at the Northern Lights Rare Beer Fest on Saturday, Minnesota History Center. Tickets are still available, I believe.
They are.
There's like two, though. You got to snatch them up.
Are we going to be at the Northern Lights Rare Beer Festival? But we are also going to be at the Brewers Breakfast Saturday morning at the Groveland
Tap. That's right. I forgot about
that. So if you are starving, if you are hungry, if you are thirsty like me, we'll see you at the Groveland Tap. Get your tickets for that ASAP.
And a pretty good opportunity to have a little bit more intimate encounter with a couple of the brewers that'll be at the Rare Beer Fest later in the day. But, you know, Jeremy Price from Price Brewing Company, Jeremy Danner from Boulevard Brewing Company down in Kansas City is coming up for the event and also to be at the Brewers Breakfast. It's a good opportunity to get to have a little bit more intimate one-on-one time with those guys.
Twitter legend Jeremy Danner.
Yeah, we should all be Dannering right now.
I don't fly Southwest, but if I flew Southwest, I would be Dannering like it was my job.
That guy's a Twitter legend. Always entertaining.
I am all about getting more intimate with Jeremy Price, too.
Yeah.
All right, maybe not over breakfast, though.
What?
when we left off.
I call it Sunrise Delight.
Okay.
Morning Delight.
All right. This is a family show. Family show.
I'm sad that Jeremy's never going to come on the show again now. I'm sorry. I was just kidding.
When we left off, we were talking about some of the trends in craft brewing and talking about some of the big core beer brands and flagships. And there was, we're just leaving February, there was a trend, hashtag flagship February. And I dug the article up in between segments. Drew, do you want to give us a quick read through that news story?
It's, I'll sum it up. I mean, the
the gist of it is that a lot of the what could be considered your heritage brands in the craft beer world, Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, as mentioned last segment, is the one that gets the gets mentioned the most often. But you know you see
Anchor Steam,
Sam Adams Boston Lager, Fat Tire, New Belgium. I think you could. I don't see Stone listed in here, but I think Stone would be certainly qualify in this conversation.
Allagash would be up there.
Sure.
Bell's
beers that, that I don't want to say they've fallen out of favor, but you know, part of being a craft beer nerd is always running after the new thing, right? Always running after the new release. You find something new in your liquor store and you want to try it. So these brands that were sort of ushered in this craft beer explosion that we're all enjoying are really struggling. So they launched this Flagship February. It's a month-long international celebration of flagship beers. And they've asked taverns, taverns, bars, liquor stores and everything to feature a lot of these items, a lot of these brands that, you know, the craft beer world has sort of moved off of because they've been around for a long time and everybody's so excited about what the next new thing is. The bottom line is new doesn't always mean good. And you'd be hard-pressed to find a better version of a pale ale than Sierra Nevada's, right?
I would agree with that.
It's the definition by BJCP standards, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think the, you know, my takeaway from it is that, you know, these are the folks who may have paved the way for a lot of the Johnny-come-latelys, for
absolutely.
Lack of
a more
respectful term.
You got to pay homage, right?
I mean, you know.
Pay your respects.
There's a lot of people who made a lot of really great beer before a lot of people have, you know, started to cut their teeth in this business. So they've been making a lot of great beer for a long time, and that beer, for whatever reason, with the change in the market, with the hyper-local, with the styles that are not those flagship brands anymore, they're not getting bought. And so that's the idea behind this hashtag campaign, Flagship February, is to help save those core beer brands. That helped pave the way. So I would love to get the thoughts of the Knights of the Round Table here on that concept, on that hashtag campaign. What do you guys think of that idea? Do you think it's sound? Do you think it's silly? Should we bow to the whims of the consumers? What's your thoughts?
Well, I think first and foremost, it comes down to what the consumer wants to purchase, right? It's their money in their wallet, and they're going to spend it the way they want to. Mm-hmm. Now, taking that away, I'm going to give you my veteran opinion and my purist opinion that, you know, the fact that you don't see Anchor Steam anywhere, not even on the shelves anymore, it's sad. The category of California Common is it's basically extinct. I mean, it's basically a dinosaur. You never see it. You see a few breweries here and there maybe making a varietal of that, something they'll call it like the South Coast Common or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, throwing the Sierra Nevadas, those guys away, breaks my heart because those are the guys that they're the reason why we're all drinking what we're drinking today. You know, they don't have to be in your neighborhood for you to drink them. You can just enjoy a good beer because it's a good beer. It doesn't have to be within 6 feet of your house.
But, you know,
and it's cool that there's breweries within 6 feet of your house. Like, that's like we're in the golden age of breweries. That's like the coolest thing about it, right? That you can go support your local buddy or whatever, your local neighborhood establishments. But, I mean,
well,
come on.
Joe, Michael, you guys, you know, are integral parts of local tap rooms. What are your thoughts on tap rooms versus hashtag Flagship February?
I think they both play a part. I mean, in my mind, whenever I sit down and I'm going to have a beer, my goal is to have the best beer I can possibly have. Whether that's a bottle of High Life because that's the best beer in that establishment, mm-hmm. or it's a bottle of Two Hearted because Two Hearted is absolutely delicious, or it's the brewery down the street that's come out with the new Cocoa Crispy Puffs Milkshake IPA. Whatever the best product is at the time, that's what I'm going to go for. So I drink probably more flagship beer than your average beer consumer, but you know, if somebody a hashtag on Twitter makes people buy a 6-pack of Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, cool, I'm in.
Michael, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. You know, in a similar vein, I do seek out the best beer. You know, I don't seek out what's just local. I don't seek out what's national, what's imported. I seek out the best beer for the style that I'm seeking or that I want to drink at the moment. you know, I understand the need for that hashtag. You know, these brands, like you said, paved the way, and they're trying to, you know, make sure that they stay relevant and that, you know, people are aware of who they are. I think it's a tough generational shift in where we are as breweries and consumers, and everything I think will shake out. You know, if you make excellent beer and you keep doing what you're doing, the volume of Sierra Nevada Pale Ale might go down. It will. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. It mm-hmm. will go down. They're not going to brew as much as they did in their heyday. But as long as they continue to make fantastic, great beer and all of these other, you know, flagship beers, if they keep making them great and they find the new niche for where that product fits, I think the dust will clear. And I think as we shift and as people grow as consumers, I think everything will work out.
I agree with that sentiment. I think the cream is going to rise to the top.
Always does.
Mm-hmm. I think nobody's going to sink that torpedo, right? So let's. We've been a bit remiss in covering Fair State stuff, and for that I apologize, Joe. Let's before the segment ends, let's talk about what you're bringing to the Northern Lights Rare Beer Fest. I see you're bringing U-Pick 2018. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah. So Fair State is a cooperatively owned brewery. So we have a bunch of members. They are voting members in the brewery. Mm-hmm. We invited them all out to an orchard. They picked a whole bunch of fruit, and we put it into a barrel-aged saison. So
that's really cool.
Yeah. So there was a ton of raspberries, strawberries, and blueberries that went into it. The highest level of fruit that we've ever put into a beer. It sat in a steel dairy tank for a couple of months to macerate on the fruit, and then we bottle conditioned it. And it's like, it's just a fruit explosion in the glass. It's bright pink. It smells like, you know, a farmer's market in June. Just like juicy berry happiness.
Is there a dominant fruit flavor out of the blueberries, strawberries, raspberries? Or are they all just kind of, it's berries, man?
You know, it's, I would say the aroma is all strawberry, but the flavor is mostly that raspberry, that like, raspberry seed, tart, strong. It stands out. It's really cool.
Very nice. And you've got 1170 miles. Tell me about this beer. It's a Gesture King collaboration.
Yeah, yeah. So Nico, our head brewer, he was originally at Live Oak Brewing down in mm-hmm. Texas. And so he knew all the guys in the Texas brewing scene. And the guys from Jester King, of course, are buddies of his. He worked there even for a while. And they came up and we brewed a mixed culture saison. They brought some rosemary from the farm. We went up and we picked some Doug Fir tips from the North Shore, threw that all into the beer. It's got just a little bit of a piney resin thing, but it's mostly just this funky, cracker dry, kind of tart saison.
Awesome. That sounds fantastic. I cannot wait to have it and the rest of the beers at Northern Lights Rare Beer Fest. We will see you at that. Come say hi. Come.
Yeah, swing by, say hello. We'll be recording right there in that little stairwell between the first and second levels.
Come bring me a beer.
But you know what? That's really good advice. Because it is tough to get away and get some beers sometimes while
we're
recording.
And one of those trick chicken sliders.
So, yeah, please. If you're there, everybody who goes, stop and bring us something. Food or beer.
All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Minnesota Beercast. Thanks so much for joining us. We will see you next time. And sometimes it makes me feel mellow.